Welcome to Life After Journalism, in which we hear from the people who brought us to the news and see what they're up to now that they're getting on with their lives. I'm your host, Matt Smith, and as the minute waltz fades away, we ask that the studio audience please give a polite round of applause to our guest today, James Button. James is a former journalist from The Age, where he worked as a European correspondent, and later he was a speechwriter for Prime Minister Kevin Rudd. In his career, he's won 2 Walkley Awards, and is currently communications manager at the Grattan Institute, and is working on his first book.
I did an arts degree at Melbourne Uni, co-edited Farrago, the student paper there. That was very exciting and really confirmed my desire to be a journalist, but I think I probably wanted to do the Farrago job because I was already interested in journalism. I'd always been interested in writing since I was a kid. You know, I wanted to write the great Australian novel, couldn't work out a way to make that pay. So like many people who've had that desire, I went into journalism. And the great Australian novel remains unwritten, at least by me anyway. And when I got into it, it was, I guess, every bit as exciting as I had hoped it would be.
You've made a name for yourself as a feature writer. Why do you prefer that over conventional reporting?
Look, I think the thing about feature writing is that they're pieces of writing, so they're the best form in print journalism of exercising and developing writing skills. Less and less, sadly, but for a long time, in a newspaper like The Age, you could actually engage in long-form journalism, so 3,000, 4,000-word pieces. There are far fewer of those these days, which is a real pity, but it would give you a chance to examine the arguments thoroughly in a way that a news story can't do, and not just examine them, but actually come to view yourself about what was right and wrong, get lots of voices in them, get lots of colour, and then the task of weaving it all together into a hopefully a powerful piece. It's a great pleasure in terms of writing to do a good feature.
You left The Age for a while to go to Time Australia magazine.
Yep.
You won a Walkley there in 1992. Can you tell me about winning the Walkley and what you think of the story that won it?
Look, I did a hell of a lot of work on it. It's sort of why I went to Time Australia was that the editor at the time was a guy called Michael Gawenda, who later on went to be editor of The Age. And Michael had the budget and the capacity and the interest to promote long stories. And so the parent company, Time America, wanted an article on Australia. So I wrote a piece which for Australia was ran at about 6,000 words. I basically got travel anywhere I wanted to in Australia and talked to anybody I wanted to. I spoke to Paul Keating, who was then the Prime Minister. I spoke to Gareth Evans, who was the Foreign Minister. I spoke to a bunch of businessmen, like the CEO of BHP. You know, this was very exciting, you know, to be able to talk to these people. I spoke to Aboriginal people in the west of Sydney, all kinds of people. A boy studying Japanese in far remote Queensland. I mean, I didn't speak to him personally. I spoke to him by phone. The difficulty with that was stitching it all together, both into a coherent flow, but also into an argument. And I guess the argument that I developed and saw happening in Australia at the time was, it sort of hasn't turned out this way, but what I saw happening was that it's possible that a kind of new culture was being born in Australia that was part the old Australia, but also a culture much more linked to Asia, but also having indigenous elements in it as well.
Yes.
Yep. And that sort of came out of my research with a bit of hope from me layered on the top, I guess. But it was a great experience, and it was a great sort of lesson in how to weave together information, but still maintain an argument. You know, you can't just throw down lots of information and stories. They've all got to be strung out like pearls on a line, and they've got to be going in a direction.
After that, you returned to The Age and eventually wound up being the European correspondent.
Yeah.
What made you decide you wanted to make that career move?
The jobs of foreign correspondents are about the best jobs you can have on papers. You get to go overseas. You get to write about everything, Matt. So I wrote about politics, business, sport, human interest, and it was all of Europe, not just Britain. So I went from Kenya to a climate change conference, to Turkey 5 times, to Denmark. London being so close to so many other countries, you just get wonderful opportunities in that job. To Switzerland, where an Australian man was going to commit suicide in an assisted suicide clinic, and he was being brought there by the pro-death with dignity campaigner, Philip Nitschke. So that was a very disturbing and confronting but fascinating story to work on.
And your second Walkley.
Yeah, that's right. And the July 7th bombings happened in London, which was horrendous, but of course, absolutely extraordinary event. Fantastic experience to have had.
Do you think that we still need foreign correspondents in modern media then?
Yeah, I do. It's harder to justify now in a way, I guess, because of the internet, you can access so much stuff overseas. But the thing is, most of that stuff is not written in a way that explains the issue to an Australian audience. And what the foreign correspondent can and should do is to actually explain what's going on for Australian readers and to find Australian connections to that event when they can. I do see the foreign correspondence as being increasingly endangered. I'm sure the ABC will keep their correspondence, but if you look at The Age, I don't think they have the Tokyo correspondent anymore. They used to have three correspondents in America, one on the West Coast, one in New York, one in Washington. Now there's just one left in Washington. There used to be a Middle East correspondent, it's gone. Used to be a Berlin correspondent, gone. It's just a complete pulling back. There's still an Indonesian correspondent, but there's no longer a Singapore or a Bangkok correspondent. It's a shrinking role, which is a real pity.
But at the same time, if there's anything emerging or breaking, it's very easy to get our reporters there. We saw that happen
during
the Japanese.
Yeah, that's true. But of course, if you've lived there, you've got a lot more of the context. You're liable to have sources who can help out. I understand that newspapers are in very tough times economically, and you look at the budgets of correspondents, they're very high, they're very expensive. But I do think when newspapers were strong, they saw their landscape as all the world, and they really tried to explain the world to local readers. I'm not saying there was ever a golden age. I basically came into The Age, I suppose, at the end of its kind of glory days. But still, the paper was very well off. It could afford having correspondents. It could afford reporters working for a long time on stories. Mm. That sadly has gone.
Yeah.
Just because of the changing business model.
You're now working as the communications manager at the Grattan Institute.
Yeah.
What made you make that career change?
At the end of 2008, I got offered a job writing speeches for Kevin Rudd, and I'd been in the UK as a correspondent, and after I got back, I'd been working on a book which was loosely, mostly around my experiences there, and to be honest, I was struggling with the book. I just found it really hard to find the right theme to pull it all together, and then when I got offered this job, it was both a fascinating opportunity in its own right, and frankly, I thought, well, this book is not really working, so I should take this job. And I did. I went to work in Canberra for about 15 months, and I left Canberra at the end of March, early April, for family reasons. I'm married with two kids. While they weren't complaining, it was tough on my wife, and I was going to Canberra every week. And I was missing out on seeing them. So I came back to Melbourne, and I started working on a book, Matt, about politics, a different book from the one I was talking about before, about politics and speech writing and storytelling and Labour Party and a bunch of things. And I needed to support that. So I was offered a job at the Grattan Institute. I do it 3 days a week. Thursday, Friday, I work on this book.
So yeah.
Mostly do writing and editing in here, some communications work. And, you know, it's a really good job. I like it a lot. But it also funds this writing project.
Ultimately, you got the job offer and you got out of journalism. Had it lost its appeal to you?
It's a really good question. No, I don't think it had. It's just that I sort of got sidetracked out of journalism because of this speech writing job. What I did was that I wrote speeches directly for Kevin Rudd for 6 months. It sort of sidetracked me, I guess, towards policy, and this job here is a continuation of that. But I don't see myself as having left journalism forever. I love journalism. It's just, you ask about did it lose its attraction? Not at all, except that it's harder to find roles in journalism now that are the things that you really want to do. Editors are really under pressure. And so you can't just go back and say, I'd like to do these things. I mean, you might be lucky and find a job that is a perfect fit with your wishes, but more than likely you won't. I have a lot of friends in journalism, and I look at their situation, and it often seems very difficult for them.
Many journalists consider a move to PR or to media communications to be a move to the dark side.
Yeah.
What's your take on that?
I think it often is the dark side. There is a place for public relations. It's just that good public relations and public relations with integrity is about finding ways to tell the truth. Now, how often does that happen? I don't know. I think that a lot of journalists often go and work for politicians, for example, as their media advisor, and they write the press releases. And you could say that was public relations, and in a way it is, or spin or whatever. But they might also have an aspiration to work for a political party because they believe in their policies or something. You know, it really depends on who you're working for and whether the company or organisation that you're working for is one that you feel has integrity and is doing things that you can live with, and ideally not just live with, but feel proud of.
Yeah.
So I guess I wouldn't want to make a blanket condemnation of public relations. I think the problem about public relations for a lot of journalists is that at its best, really important to stress those words, it's about finding out what the truth of something is. It doesn't always happen, or you don't get the space to do it or the time to do it. But I think journalists who have experienced that really satisfying intellectual pleasure of weighing up two sides and stating a truth about something, either in an opinion piece or in a feature, probably imagine, often justifiably, that then to go and take one side of an argument and just push one point of view, as in public relations, or to promote one product or one idea, is a, not betrayal, but a slipping away from the high principles and ethics or satisfactions of journalism.
Mm.
I could think of a whole bunch of companies or organisations that I wouldn't want to do PR for, even if I didn't think they were bad, as in ethically bad, but I didn't feel inspired to work for. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
In this case, like working here at Grattan, my job is a lot of writing and editing. You know, I write some articles for the newspapers or help work on articles for newspapers. I work on reports. I do write press releases. For an organisation that I believe in, I think is doing good work, is intelligent and is independent, I don't feel any ethical concerns about my own job. And I guess the sort of public relations that you work for, as I say, really depends on the organisation.
What piece of advice would you give to aspiring journalists?
Get out there and do journalism and try as hard as you can to get it published, wherever you can. And don't be precious about that. I mean, yes, try the big papers or the radio station, but if not, the local papers, online sites, magazines, whatever, whatever you can get a folio of work together and get it out there. And the thing to always consider is that there are great stories all over the place. There are stories in our communities, the world and streets, and organisations and institutions around us are changing. Go and find those stories and to write about them. I feel, Matt, that we're really suffering from a kind of hole in our understanding of a lot of issues, which is made more pronounced by the current weakness and pressures that are on the mainstream media. So we need journalists. We certainly need them as much as ever, and we probably need them more than ever. It's just that finding the money to pay those journalists, the first thing, and even more than that, being able to fund them to do important things which involve long-term and serious research is getting harder and harder, and that's the problem with the changing business model and the decline of newspapers. That's the really difficult problem.
James Button there, writer and communications manager at the Grattan Institute. Next week on Life After Journalism, we'll hear from Michael Gawenda, the Walkley Award-winning former editor-in-chief of The Age.